Although vaccinations have ramped up around the country, a troubling new development could threaten their effectiveness. New variants of this coronavirus have emerged that are more contagious and resistant to the vaccine. Virologist Thomas Friedrich says this is normal for viruses, especially as vaccines make more people immune to the virus. But that doesn't mean people shouldn't be more cautious. Friedrich joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about these new mutations in the coronavirus and what it could mean for the future of this pandemic.
When we talk about a virus mutating and these different variants that we're seeing right now, what are the implications of these mutations? Are they inherently stronger?
No, I think it's really important to keep this in mind. You know, as people who study viruses, we expect them to mutate. And as a matter of fact, as we learn about evolution, we learn that a lot of mutations are actually bad for the virus. They're deleterious. And so viruses that randomly make bad mutations, they may eventually die out. A lot of mutations kind of don't seem to matter for the virus's function one way or another. And as the virus spreads, we expect it to sort of build up an increasing number of mutations that we can use to distinguish viruses that are around today from ones that were around, say, at the start of the pandemic. And so a lot of what we do with these mutations that don't really seem to affect the virus's function is we can use them as genetic fingerprints and use them to track how different variants of the virus are moving around, through Wisconsin and the country and the world. However, every once in a while, randomly, some mutation may allow the virus to do something a little bit better, to grow a little faster, to attach to human cells a little bit better, or maybe to evade detection by some part of our immune response. And so those viruses that have such mutations are concerning to us in particular. And that's another reason why we want to track virus evolution, is so that we can detect when and if such variants of concern may arise, and then we can see how they may circulate in the world.
We've been hearing a lot about different variants that have made their way to the U.S., specifically a variant from the U.K., South Africa, and another one from Brazil. When we look at these different variants specifically, are there complications that have come up with them?
Yes. So I should say at first, naming these variants is a real challenge. As scientists, we've learned that we should get away from place names as much as possible, because there can be stigma associated with, you know, having a virus named after your place. That being said, the other ways that we name these viruses are somewhat cumbersome. So the virus that was first detected in the UK doesn't necessarily mean it came from there, but the first detected in the UK is often called B117. So I will call it B117 for the most part. And then there are these two other viruses. There's one that was first detected in South Africa, which is sometimes called B1351 or 501YV2. You can see why we don't like those names either. And then there's this one in Brazil called P2. So I'll just quickly describe each of those and why we're concerned about them. The B117 variant that was detected in the UK first, we have a pretty good sense that that virus is more contagious than other viruses. There has been a little speculation that it may also cause more severe disease than other viruses, but I don't think that's strongly supported by evidence right now. We know that this virus has also been detected in the United States, including two cases in Wisconsin. I think that we can expect that if that virus behaves like it did in the UK and other countries in Europe, that it's going to start to outrace other viruses here in the US also. And that will affect how we think about reopening, especially returning to school, you know, our adherence to masking and social distancing and all of those things. There's another variant that you mentioned that was first detected in South Africa. This virus is sometimes called 501YV2 or B1351. And so this virus is causing concern because it was detected spreading in a place where there had already been a pretty large outbreak in our summer, the Southern Hemisphere's winter. And so they expected people in this area to have a high degree of population immunity, maybe not like herd level immunity to stop the spread, but a lot of people there should already be immune to the virus. And yet new infections are happening at a pretty high rate. That was concerning, that maybe somehow that virus had found a way to evade immune detection a little bit. Similarly, we have some very recent reports from vaccine trials that have been done in South Africa that show lower levels of vaccine effectiveness in South Africa, where this variant is circulating widely, than in other places where they compared, like in the UK. So that is concerning, that current vaccines may be a little less effective against those viruses. And then finally, there's a variant that has been spreading in Brazil that we know the least about. And here again, there was a place in the Amazon region in Brazil, a city called Manaus, which is a pretty large city, that had an enormously high level of infection over the summer. So a lot of people must be immune, and yet they have another large outbreak happening now. And that's caused by a different virus, has slightly different combinations of mutations. But what's particularly concerning is that some of the mutations in this virus that's detected in Brazil are shared by the virus that is detected in South Africa. And so that sort of parallel evolution suggests to us that maybe these viruses are indeed finding ways to mask themselves from the immune response a little bit.
I think that's what's most concerning for people when they hear about these, especially, you know, you were talking about South Africa and the efficacy of vaccines. Something you said led me to believe that these variants also cause more intense symptoms. Is that accurate?
We don't know that. So what is happening is that people who were infected previously in Brazil and South Africa and places where there was a lot of COVID-19 transmission earlier in the year, we're seeing kind of another spike in activity in those places. That doesn't mean that the disease is any more severe, and it's hard to tell what proportion of the people who are being infected now in those places were also infected, say in July and August. But there have been some clear reports of people being infected twice. So one time, you know, let's say in July, and now again with a new variant. And so it could be that that new variant is able to kind of get around that person's immune response. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's causing a more severe disease this time.
Of course, so many Americans still haven't gotten the vaccine, but hearing now that the virus has been able to mutate, at least in some ways, to make the vaccine less effective, that's disconcerting.
It's definitely troublesome. I think that there's a silver lining to that, which is that at least in some information we have, some of the vaccines are able to generate such a strong immune response in most people that we might expect that to overcome the sort of modicum of masking that these variants are able to do for themselves. So this does not mean that vaccines are not effective at all. You know, there was one study that suggested about 70% vaccine effectiveness in a place where these variants were not common, and then about 50% effectiveness in South Africa where they were common. So that doesn't mean that the vaccines don't work at all. And even then, the vaccines were able to protect against hospitalization and death. And so I think, as I believe Dr. Fauci also mentioned, you know, we just may need to revise our expectations a little bit about what the vaccines might do, given the fact that these viral mutants are beginning to circulate.
It reminds me so much of the flu, because as we're talking about this and how the virus is mutating, I'm reminded of the flu vaccine, which, of course, you know, for people who get a flu shot, you get it usually once a year. Is that something that we might expect with COVID-19?
Yes, I think that, you know, we are going to have to just wait and see how this plays out. From the beginning, some scientists have predicted that this is exactly what will happen with COVID-19, that the virus will adapt to humans just like influenza does, and that we may need to update the vaccines from time to time. Does that mean every year or more often or less often? For how long? We don't know. And that seems to be what is happening. So the evolutionary rate of the COVID-19 coronavirus now seems to be at least as fast as sort of the fastest evolving of the seasonal flu viruses. That's not really surprising, though. You know, I mean, like there's such a huge amount of virus replication happening in the world. There are so many infections still today. And an increasing number of people are becoming immune, either because they've already been infected or because we're starting to roll out vaccines. And that's exactly the situation where, as somebody who studies viral evolution, I would expect the virus to be most likely to adapt. Because what the virus needs to do that is a lot of infections, because each time the virus infects a new person, it kind of gets a chance to make some new mutations. You know, one more pull at the slot machine. And then what we call a selective pressure, which is, you know, something, some way for natural selection to kind of favor some strains of the virus over others. And so a larger proportion of the human population being immune could apply that pressure and make it so that viruses that are by chance able to hide themselves from the immune system will preferentially transmit and spread. And so we may need to update the vaccines to kind of keep pace with this until we drive virus replication and transmission down to lower levels.
So to some extent, it seems like this could be the virus having a last couple punches in a fight that is hopefully dying down.
I hope that's true. I mean, I hope that we don't have the kind of horror movie villain where you think it's dead and it comes back. But I'm afraid that something like that may happen, you know, in the first half of this year. I think the signs in Wisconsin right now are overall pretty good. We're trending in good directions. The number of new infections is going down and associated measures are going down. And it may continue that way for a while. But behind the scenes, these more transmissible viruses and potentially immune escape viruses are beginning to increase in numbers in our country. And so it'll take a while for them to cause a larger number of infections. There are a few different studies trying to kind of project this into the future. And they estimate that by late March, some of these new variants may be causing most coronavirus infections in the US. So we really need to vaccinate as many people as possible between now and then. And the good news about all of this is, you know, the same measures that we have been told about since the beginning of the pandemic still work against these variants. So, you know, masking and hand washing and limiting gatherings and social distancing, all of these things limit the spread of the new variants too.
All right. Well, Thomas, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Anytime.
Thomas Friedrich is a virologist and professor of pathobiological sciences at UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Friedrich spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers.